This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
David Kirby joins me on the long line. David, how are you, sir?
Very well. How are you?
Very good. Thank you for spending some time with us. David's new book, Animal Factory, The Looming Threat of Industrial Pig Dairy and Poultry Farms on Humans and the Environment, will be released by St. Martin's Press in February of 2010, and we're very much looking forward to that. His first book, Evidence of Harm, was a New York Times bestseller and won the Investigative Reporters and Editors Award for Best Book. He is also a field producer for several cable network television productions. David, let's talk about the very latest on autism. I'm curious, what was your reaction when the government announced the new numbers recently that we were looking at one in about 60 boys now being diagnosed with autism?
Well, my reaction was that there wasn't a reaction in the government, the mainstream media, or the general public, or not much of one. One in 100 kids is about one in 60 boys. That is an epidemic. That is a public crisis. That's an emergency. And we got a shrug and a ho-hum, and then we moved on to boys in balloons and other distractions. So I think it's scandalous.
Yeah,
that the reaction was not stronger. This is, you know, if you look at the CDC data, which is the most reliable data of the two studies, and Kathleen Sebelius said the new numbers will be about 1 in 100. That's for children born in 1996 who were studied at the age of 8 in 2004, compared to children born in 1994 who were studied in 2002. So we have what amounts to essentially a 50% increase in a two-year period. So we're looking at kids who are 13 years old today versus kids who are 15 years old today. It may not be a 50% difference. I think it's about 40%. But it doesn't make any sense that parents of children of 15-year-olds would be that much less likely to get services for their kids when parents of the 13-year-olds across the street, whose child is very similar to their own child, is enrolled in autism services. You can't have that big of a leap in 2 years and explain it all by better diagnosing.
We're talking with award-winning investigative journalist and best-selling author David Kirby. Honored to have him on the program. David, now you have been tracking the CDC and the government employees and how they handle this kind of news for many years. Are we seeing any kind of change? Are we still seeing? Well, what are we seeing? What's your read on these people who bring us this news?
My read is that they still want to try to explain this as a purely genetic or mostly genetic disorder that has always been with us, that children who were autistic in the past were not labeled as such. They were misdiagnosed as mentally retarded or bipolar, and that these numbers represent nothing new. That's why I said the shrug and the ho-hum is really unfortunate, because any thinking person who's been around on this planet more than 10 or 20 years knows that it was not always this way. And now the special education programs in the schools are overflowing with kids who need services, whereas the older kids are not there in the same numbers, but they go to the same school. So they're trying to downplay the increase, I think. They're trying to pretend like there is no environmental influence in autism, and they're trying not to to make people panic, but I still think one in 60 boys, if that's not going to get your attention, I really don't know what will.
So one of your recent blog posts is you pose this question to readers: do you believe that one in 60 American males has autism? Because by extension, if we're to believe the government, that this is nothing new, that these kind of autism numbers have always been with us, we're just better at finding these kids now, well, then that means that one in 60 males my age, 43, have autism. And that's ludicrous.
That's right. And, you know, I live in New York City. I deal with literally hundreds of people a day. You know, at least half of them are men. In stores, restaurants, casual exchanges on the street, buying a subway pass. I mean, you just talk to people. You see people. You deal with them. And if 2% of the men in New York City were on the autism spectrum, I think I would notice it. They're not there.
Yeah,
you asked me about government officials and everything. And,
yeah.
You know, just maybe to break a tiny bit of news here today, I've been working on a piece for Huffington Post based on something that, Katie Wright wrote on the Age of Autism blog about some handwritten notes that were found after a meeting of the Interagency Autism Coordinating Committee. And the notes were scribbled by Dr. Story Landis, who is director of the National Institute on Neurodevelopmental Disorders and Stroke, an NIH agency, and she sits on this panel, a very powerful panel that helps decide how autism research money gets spent. And in the notes, she said several things. I mean, I won't go into detail because they're on the Age of Autism blog, but I asked her to please elaborate and tell me how her remarks were taken out of context. She seemed to say that, you know, Lynn Redwood, who was testifying at the time, wanted people to study those children who were paid out for vaccine injury in vaccine court. We've paid out several hundreds of millions of dollars to 1,322 children who had seizure disorders and brain damage following vaccination, and there's a lot of belief that the rate of autism in that group of kids is much higher than 1 in 100. So I asked Dr. Landis to clarify her note, which she left behind, and she wrote that her note addressed the fact, I'm reading here right now, I just got this email from Dr. Landis, that it is important for autism researchers to study the children who have been most profoundly affected by their response to vaccines. So, in essence, she's agreed with Lynn Redwood that this should be studied, and by the way, the National Vaccine Advisory Committee voted unanimously to support, recommend studies exactly in that area.
What are the larger implications of this for people who might not be as familiar with
this? Yeah, I apologize. I know that was probably way insider baseball.
That's all right. That's all right.
Well, the larger implications is that mainstream researchers in positions of power in the U.S. government, Dr. Landis is not the only one, are coming to realize that parents may have a point when they said that their child suffered a vaccine injury, fever, seizure disorders, symptoms of brain damage, other problems that required medical attention following vaccination, and then within a month or two after that, descended into autism, that maybe it is worthwhile to look at kids who did suffer a vaccine injury, a known medically listed vaccine injury, and see if that injury is a risk factor. Does that increase the risk for then developing autism? So the main point is people like me who get called crazy and fringe and anti-vaccine, and I'm not any of those things, I assure you, have a point, and that mainstream researchers are coming around to say we need to at least look at this.
Finally, at last, we have scientists saying, perhaps we should do some science.
Well, HHS should have done this science a long time ago. They are sitting on that database. They have these 1,322 children. They know how to contact the families. They're in contact with the families. They never bothered to pick up the phone and call the parents and say, hey, did your kid go on to develop autism? They say they just don't track that. And if that's not willful ignorance, Coy, I don't know what is.
Yeah. And when the whole history of autism one day, David, is written, and the full scope of this tragedy that we are living in right now is fully known and appreciated by the wider public, willful ignorance approaching criminal activity, as far as I am concerned, on the part of the people that yield much power in this country, I think that will be one of the conclusions that historians will reach.
Well, I'll leave that to historians, and I don't believe in conspiracy theories, and I certainly don't think anybody is out to intentionally hurt children, but I believe in such things as bad science, faulty science, poorly done science, and I think a lot of these studies that are held up to exonerate vaccines in autism fit that category, and yet, you know, bad studies get done all the time. That doesn't mean people are out to hurt children.
Yeah.
But as far as history, I think there are people in positions of power now who will be judged poorly. Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't mean to imply that, there's intentional harm being done, but when you mentioned willful ignorance, there is very willful ignorance, and very willfully many people are choosing not to do real science that could help children.
Yes, but then there are those people who are trying to do that science, and it's yielding really, really important results.
Yeah, let's talk about some of that. You wrote a recent article about the new studies that reveal perhaps a viral infection connection to autism.
Yeah, you know, that wasn't a study. It hasn't been published. It was a doctor speculating on television, but to me, that's newsworthy. She is a very well-respected researcher who helped identify a retrovirus, XMRV, in 95% of patients with chronic fatigue syndrome, which is a really big discovery. They still have to figure out what the significance is. Is the virus causing the chronic fatigue, or does the immune deficiency of having chronic fatigue allow one to become a carrier of this virus? However, the same researcher looked at a small grouping of children with autism and found the retrovirus in 40% of their samples. Now, we obviously hope this will be published, and we'll find out exactly how many children with autism had the virus, but it's an interesting development, and the doctor openly speculated on this television program that there might be something involved with vaccination, the stimulation of the immune system, the multiplication of immune cells that are already infected with the retrovirus might then also increase activation of the virus.
We're talking with David Kirby, award-winning and best-selling author. You can check out him online at evidenceofharm.com. David, I'm curious, what is it you think that the science that most needs to be done right now? What study would, if you could see any one study be done tomorrow, what one study would you like to see done that you think would really open the door to some new understandings about what's happening to our kids?
Well, there's absolutely no question that the number one study that needs to be done is a large group of vaccinated versus unvaccinated children. And people like Tom Insel, on that same committee as Dr. Story Landis, have opposed that, saying it would be unethical to randomly divide two groups of children into placebo and vaccine groups and do a prospective clinical trial, which would be the gold standard. But that doesn't mean you can't do either a retroactive study of parents who just chose not to vaccinate their children and see their health outcomes compared to parents who did vaccinate their children, controlling for all kinds of confounding factors. It's difficult, but it can be done. And the other way to do it, and this is actually already happening de facto, is some parents have already decided they're not going to vaccinate their kids. And there's a study underway by NIH called the Early Study that's looking at pregnant women who already have a child with autism, and they're following them starting a pregnancy and going up to about 2 years or 4 years of age, and basically documenting every single medical procedure, everything, food, household toxins, vaccines, prenatal vaccines, mercury exposure, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, the reason they're using that is because people who have already had one child with autism have a much higher chance of having another child with autism, we know. But I also know, just by talking to thousands and thousands and thousands of parents with children with autism, many of them are not going to vaccinate their subsequent children. So 1,200 women are going to be enrolled in this study, and I think they expect up to 30% of them to have a child with autism, which would be 30%. 30% would be 400 children with autism. Now, there will be a certain number of women, I'm going to guess roughly 30%, who aren't going to vaccinate the subsequent sibling. So I may have gotten my numbers wrong, but we're going to have a chunk of women who have not vaccinated their children compared with a group of women who have vaccinated their children, all of them at higher risk for autism. And the main researcher of the study, Dr. Craig Neuschafer, has more or less said that this is a de facto, or could be, not only Dr. Neuschafer, but Dr. Jerry Dawson at Autism Speaks, that this could be considered a vaccinated versus unvaccinated study. But there's a lot more that needs to be done, and we need to identify some of the common symptoms and markers that we find in a lot of children with autism. Why do so many of them have chronic neuroinflammation? Why do they have oxidative stress? Why do they have mitochondrial dysfunction in many cases? Why do they have depleted levels of glutathione, which is a natural antioxidant and detoxifier? It binds with heavy metals. Why are these children not protected with glutathione? And would that lack of glutathione lead to heavy metal accumulation and toxicity and increased oxidative stress?
We're talking with award-winning author and best-selling author David Kirby. You can check him out online at evidenceofharm.com. David, before I let you go, really quick here, there was a new study regarding the hepatitis B vaccine.
There have been several. One was published in Neurotoxicology, a primate study that showed that infant apes who got the hepatitis B vaccine series were far more likely to have developmental delays in terms of interaction with their mother and other signs that are studied in primate research. There was a abstract that hopefully we'll see the full study soon, showing that boys vaccinated with hepatitis B were three times more likely to have an autism spectrum disorder. Those same authors, using a separate database in a study that was published, showed that boys getting hepatitis B vaccine were eight times more likely to have an early intervention service in school dedicated to them. And another study has shown hepatitis B in adults and in children, can cause demyelination of the brain, a stripping away of some of the protective myelin coating on the brain, which at least one case in vaccine court, the judge ruled that led to an autism spectrum disorder.
Amazing. David Kirby's new book, Animal Factory, will be released in February of 2010. We're looking forward to that. His first book, Evidence of Harm, was a New York Times bestseller, and it won the Investigative Reporters and Editors Award for Best Book. David joins us on occasion to keep us updated about the very latest research in the politics of autism. David, it's always an honor to talk to you. Thanks so much for all the work you do.
You're welcome, Coy. Thank you.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.